This is Authors' Voices, a collection of live author readings at Writer's Cast. I'm David Wilk, your host, and today I'm introducing Mary Kay Zurevlev, reading from her novel Man Alive, published in hardcover in September 2013 by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Hi, Mary Kay. You're on.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Well, I'm going to read from about 70 pages into the book. So the premise of the novel is that Owen Lerner is a pediatric psychopharmacologist, and he's struck by lightning the last night that the family is at their beach house. So there's identical twin boys who are in college and a 16-year-old daughter who, of course, is at home, and she's a gymnast, and Tony is his wife. So the scene I'm going to read you, the boys have already gone back to school. They've come home from the beach after his injury. So they're back in Bethesda, Maryland, which is a suburb of D.C. And Tony has just driven Brooke, their daughter, to gymnastics. And now she's in the car. She's just taking her time. And he's home. After he is hit by lightning, all he wants to do is barbecue. So that's where you are in the book. Tony exits at Old Georgetown Road and loops through neighborhoods of oversized homes and early Bethesda cottages. Knowing that mansion and rambler alike hold life-threatening illnesses, precarious finances, or the simple syrup of unhappiness that is part of every family recipe. She runs through the dashboard options looking for her music, and the first song starts in about how when the morning comes, this too shall pass. The strong bass beat beats beneath her ribcage, and the completely unoriginal message hammers her as well. From Johnny Cash to OK Go, with a million stops in between, people have been moved to sing nearly the same words. She likes that as much as driving. Her route snakes beneath a clotted 495, and she briefly feels the satisfaction of avoiding a frustrating mess before she drives smack into a mental wall. She has left Owen home alone. There is no one to help him climb the stairs, or, far more important, to dissuade him from firing up the grill. She and Brooke hurried to the van, almost as if it were July, a mere and impossibly distant month ago. Apparently, the limitations of his condition have yet to override a decade-long ritual. This is the way we go to gymnastics, though she had the presence of mind to furnish him with a pre-programmed cell phone. Really? A cell phone? She should have brought him along. She should have called a neighbor. She should have given him his painkillers with a bonus half early to knock him out. He is essentially a toddler, with a higher reach and a slower reaction time. Tony tries to imagine Owen enjoying his time alone. He'd complained about the lack of privacy in the hospital. Maybe he's reading a medical journal. Maybe he's watching more of the Olympics. Maybe his heart has stopped. Tony speeds toward the intersection despite the light, and when she sees the white flash of the camera in her rearview mirror, she welcomes documentation that she hurried home. In a day or two, an envelope will arrive bearing the evidence, a photograph of her rear end, license plate in perfect focus, racing through the red light at Wilson Road to get to her husband. In fact, when she runs into the house, sweaty and anxious all over again, he is sitting on his donut in his boxers, exactly as she left him, consulting the laptop at the kitchen table. She approaches him from his deaf side. Sunburned and bearded, he's grinning at the screen, and he looks remarkably game. He is sitting with his gut tucked beneath their kitchen table, briefly in no need of assistance, and he exudes the wry confidence of a movie star. He has always been supremely assured, and when she sees him like this, desire juices through her, stunning in its unfamiliarity and its insistence. No wonder she bursts into tears at a moment's notice. She's just been fantasizing in bed, even as she tormented herself about leaving him alone and in danger. She is going to have to adjust to traveling through time, not to mention space. She is practically felled by her vertiginous thoughts of lust and a life apart. Tony kisses him on the top of his fluffy head, and she sees that the creepy red trails have finally faded from his arm. "Just the woman I've been thinking about," he says, leering. His erection is peeking out of his boxers. Tony says, "Jesus, are you looking at porn?" "Barbecue pits," he says. "I'm going to make one for us. Something in stone where we can cook all the livelong day. When the wood gets hot enough, the pit ends up doing the cooking. Then we'll have us a pig pole and you will be happy." "I will." Tell me how happy I will be. Though rarely alone in the hospital, they had kissed, and she has to admit he'd become a better kisser in the storm. Once he cupped her ass when a specialist inquired if he could feel anything. Tony pulls a chair close to him and he nuzzles her. His beard at the hollow of her neck makes her tingle and heat up. Sauce dribbling down that lovely chin as you crunch through the burnt sugar crusted on the skin, he says. I'll eat the skin. You will, and you will love it. He leans forward for another kiss, one of deep appreciation. Oh, how he appreciates her, softly tasting her lips and in no apparent rush toward the next step, savoring her, drinking her in with great interest and presence all the way through the end of the kiss, after which she leans away to catch her breath. Owen wears a smile of mischievous delight, like a new lover, but better, really, because here is the familiarity of Owen without habit, as if the past were prologue. She feels recognized, known, but also separate and fresh, and she eagerly wants him alive and in their bed with her. Owen reaches out his good hand, which in itself is unfamiliar, because she's accustomed to holding his other one, to being on his right side. Each time he lifts his right foot, he lightly squeezes her palm, either because of the pain or the effort a single step engenders. He lets go of her so he can clutch the banister to ascend the stairs. In their bedroom, she undresses herself, her linen shift floating easily up and over her head, while Owen wrestles his boxers to the ground. He undresses the bed, chivalrously gesturing for her to climb aboard, and then he strokes regions of her, incanting words he's never uttered over her body. Baby's back ribs, he says, petting the backside of her ribs, slightly hidden beneath a layer of fat. He caresses the great slope of her hip and says, saddle. He is playful and chatty as he stretches across her. Here is the tender and lean Tony loin, he says. Then he returns to her side and kisses the top half of her breast. Behold, brisket of wife. He quits speaking of her as a piece of meat and fondles her fondly. His good hand is very good. In the hospital, she could not have envisioned their future as better than the past, and she has a brief understanding of why he considers normal a setback rather than an aspiration. When he rolls off her, she wants nothing more than to start again, and she smiles not only because she hasn't felt this way in 5 or 10 years, but also because that much pumping and adrenaline might kill the poor man. It occurs to her that the future could be something she has never imagined. Owen is obviously spent by their efforts. Tony pushes the hair off his glistening brow. He turns his head to kiss her palm. Ah, Antoinette, my queen, he says, and he closes his eyes, powering down. Within 10 seconds, he's fallen asleep, his thin grin gone to blubbery fish lips. I'll stop there.
Oh, that's great. I love your voice, too. It's wonderful.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to read to you.
Oh, thank you for doing that. Well, this has been Author's Voices, and we've just listened to an excerpt read by the author, Mary Kay Zurablev, of her novel, Man Alive. Thank you.